Okay, good afternoon, everybody. It is June 4th, 2009. It is our special guest today, coming up in just a moment, Steve Boiley from the Performance Institute of NLP, NLPMind.com. Everybody, this is our special guest today. Now, I want to go ahead and introduce our guest, Steve Boiley from the Performance Institute of NLP. For those of you that do not know what NLP is, of course, he's going to explain it to you. It stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming. It originally was put together by Dr. Richard Bandler and a gentleman by the name of John Grinder. This has been some unbelievable new technology that was brought in, I believe, during the 70s, actually. And Mr. Steve Boiley is probably one of the best practitioners and teachers of this around today. I personally know people that have gone and taken his seminars, and they just absolutely loved it. They could not get enough of it. They've been talking about it. They still continue to talk about it to this day. One of the things that I wanted to go ahead and let everybody know, because initially I heard about Steve Boiley from an actor I know that's in the business here, and I was in the process of just beginning on radio probably about 3 years ago, and one of the things that I completely agree with some of the premises of NLP is to feel good about something first before you make big decisions, and hence in my commercial that airs here, which initially aired on a different network and caused a bunch of reaction, good and bad, actually, but it worked, and it was inspired by my next guest, Steve Boiley. So without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on Steve Boiley. Steve, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing? Thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. How the bleep are you?
Pretty good. Let's go ahead, and I want to go ahead and back up and start from the beginning. How did you originally get involved with NLP, and how long you've been doing it, and tell us a little bit about it for those people that have not heard of this before.
Oh, I was cruising around downtown Vancouver in 1979, listening to the radio, and a news broadcast was on, and I just happened to catch a segment where they were talking about the legislators in California at the time wanting to have master practitioners of these arts of neuro-linguistic programming to reveal that they were master practitioners before they did any business deals or the deals would be void. I guess they were a little bit concerned that they are schooled in all kinds of arts of communication, including subliminal hypnosis techniques.
Mm-hmm. So that was the initial trigger that got you interested in getting trained yourself before you went on and taught others?
Are you kidding? I went, I got to know that.
Okay. So, how long have you been teaching? Has it been since 99 you've been doing seminars, or prior to that?
I first learned NLP 20 years ago and spent a lot of years applying it in the field, in management and sales and personal life and helping others overcome their problems. And it wasn't until 10 years ago that I started officially certifying practitioners, and we've been doing several seminars a year up here in Canada ever since.
Now, what type of your client base shows up for these? Is it all walks of life, or is it high-profile business people, or is it people just in sales? What type of people do you generally get at your seminars?
All of the above. There'll be people in the seminar ranging from, 20 to 70, and they all have one thing in common. They are interested in finding out about how their mind works, and they're interested in finding out about how that can be affected through language. And where they want to apply it, oh, my goodness. We'll have nuclear physicists and housewives wanting to deal with their kids better and students wanting to be able to study quicker and faster, and everybody from military to sales to therapists, they're all in the same seminar.
They're all in the same seminar. And when you how long are your seminars? Are they go for a week or 3 or 4 days, or what's the general overview of the amount of time? And during your seminars, do you actually induce the hypnotic trance at the very beginning and then install the teachings, or how's it done?
Well, the seminar runs 8 days, 10 a.m. till 10 p.m., with long breaks for lunch and supper so people can go out and practice their skills on unsuspecting people of the public just for the fun of it. And then we party afterwards every night till the bar closes, so that's more opportunity to apply communication skills.
See, you party at night to test out, do a field study of your for what's going on and what people have learned so far.
Why do you think we start at 10 a.m.?
And as far as the applications that you've seen people come in, what kind of – do you get a lot of doctors that come in or psychiatrists too that are maybe trained in hypnotherapy but not trained in NLP?
Yeah, we do from time to time. And to answer your previous question about how it's taught in an artful manner where I teach you before I teach you so that when I teach you, it's easy for you.
Okay. All right, I can already – I kind of had a preview from a mutual friend of ours, your teaching strategies, and I must say they are totally unique. Everybody, if you're interested in going studying NLP, this is the guy to go check out. Where are your – are you located in Canada? But I understand you moved. Where are you located and where do you do your seminars now?
We're in the sunny Okanagan, the place in Canada that gets more sunshine days than any other place, a destination for tourists and people with a like mind alike. There's beautiful lakes here and a great small town, so all the restaurants are all within walking distance of the hotel, mm-hmm. and becomes a great place to do business. People fly in from all over the world. The airport's not far, and it's a beautiful drive along the lakeshore to get to the hotel from the airport.
Great, great. Now, one of the things that I've been thinking about asking you to come on for quite some time because of the commercial that runs here and so forth, but one of the things that I deal with every single day, I have people from all over the world that contact me about their various financial issues, and one of the things is what I tell them is, you know, when you've either paid off, settled, or gotten rid of your alleged credit card debt and so forth, you've got to kind of reinstall your value systems and change. And a lot of people have a hard time doing that, changing their mindset for what got them into a lot of financial problems into suddenly now that they don't have them, kind of taking all that program and rewriting it and putting in something that's more effective for the current situation we're in. So what would you suggest to people that may be considering looking you up and going to check out your seminar? Like in terms of – because I have people that are in debt consciousness, deep, deep, entranced debt consciousness that they need to make some major changes so they don't go and do the same thing again in their life.
Yeah. That's it. Yep. Repeating the patterns over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it starts if we take a step back to even before they get to that point that you suggest and getting rid of their alleged debts. The thing is you know, it starts. I'll give two pieces of advice. One is how they talk to themselves, because when people look at their situation and the things that they have to do, and they have that internal voice that goes like that, you know, then.
Right.
They're not too enthused about finding solutions because all they see is the problems. So, you know, they're far better off to adjust their voice on the inside so it goes, advice from James.
Right. So internal dialogue, I mean, I've heard Richard Bandler talk about that most people don't even talk to themselves nicely. Do you find that to be true?
Well, sure. I mean, it's not. You know, although what you say to yourself is important, the way you say it is probably even more important because it can change the meaning of things completely. Because, you know, people, they start to, whatever they're focused on, they'll find. So that's the second piece of advice is, you know, what are you thinking about? What do you want? When I ask people what they want, a lot of times I get all the story about what they don't want. So they're very well focused on what they don't want. And your unconscious mind really doesn't give a bleep about it. It'll just go for whatever it is that you keep putting out there in front of it as thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. So whenever you made a mistake and your unconscious went, wait a minute, that's not the right bleeping thing to do.
Right. You know. So is it the internal dialogue is the way in which somebody speaks to themselves as well as the chosen words, or how does it work? What do you do? What do you
let's give a couple of quick examples. Let's deal with the way things are said, right? Someone could say to themselves when they maybe repeat a pattern that doesn't match the reality so well, and they'll go, "I make that up." Right, and they talk to themselves like that instead of going, "I sure bleeped that one up."
Right.
Right. It's, for me, you know, I used to have my mother's voice in my head whenever I was going to be late somewhere, which was occasionally the case, and she would say, "Stephen, you're either 10 minutes early or you're already late." When I got there, I was completely ineffective because I felt guilty about being the late guy. Then I found out it's my head; I can put whatever voice I want in there. So now I have a very attractive woman that goes, "Oh, Steve, you're going to be late."
Okay. I already see that. That's very effective then. So when people come to you, do you find, you know, when they initially start in the classes and they're asking, you know, they talk about what they don't want rather than what they do want. But when you find out what they do want, do they really know? Or are they very clear? Have they even thought it out most times?
Sometimes not. You know, they've been so focused on what they don't want in their lives, and so it's like looking backwards going down the road. I've got to get away from town, right? You can end up in the ditch pretty quick. You know, the thing is here's the crux of it, is people have amazing, effective strategies for doing things that they use on a daily basis, and they're simple, and they use them for the simple things, like I'm hungry, so they think about what they want to eat rather than thinking about not wanting to be hungry. Right? And they need to go to the bathroom. They think about, I got to go. They don't think about, oh, I don't want something else.
Right.
So, you know, this is, they use this on a daily basis over and over again for all kinds of simple things. And yet when it comes to the important things that they, what they really want in their life, the thing that's a little bit more conceptualized, maybe a little bit more complex, those highly effective strategies go completely out the window and they start doing the reverse. And then they wonder why it's not working. You know, they just got to focus on what do you do that gets good results. And simply focusing on what you want to achieve causes your unconscious to start sorting through the reality and finding the solutions that otherwise it would have missed. You know, here's a simple, simple little test that you can do just to see how effective your unconscious is at filtering out stuff for you. You know, when you look at the size of files, for example, audio files versus video files are huge. And when you consider what your eyes take in on a daily basis, it's an immense amount of data. So by necessity, we delete huge chunks of it. So, you know, this is why if you buy yourself a new red car and you start looking at it and looking at it again and again so that your unconscious is programmed to notice that thing, then you notice that there's all these other cars just like it out on the road you never even noticed before, because before it would have been deleted from your consciousness. It's not important to your, so your unconscious doesn't bring it to your attention. Now you've programmed your unconscious to spot that thing, or you wouldn't be able to find your car when you came out of the mall.
Right.
Oh, where's my car? So, you know, then it starts noticing it all over the place. And you can do this test right wherever you are, whoever is listening. And that's have a look around the environment that you're in and make sure your eyes have taken in all of the items in there. And while you're looking, just take note of how often we use right angle corners in the architecture of things. You know, as human beings, we really seem to go for the right angle corners. And so look around, take note. Now, let me ask you this. And you ask yourself this question. If I asked you now, without looking, to make a list of things that have right-angle corners, you'd probably be able to make me a pretty good list. But now, how good of a list could you do, without looking, of all the blue things?
Right.
And the answer's probably going to be not so good, you know? Or the
right.
Round things. And that's because simply by asking you to note the corners, I caused your unconscious mind to bring all those things to your attention. So this is what people do. Whatever they put in front of their unconscious mind, it starts sorting through this giant data of input on an ongoing basis and only brings to your attention those things you've asked it to.
Now, this is a good point to bring up, because most people that have that come to me that I suggest about doing some, you know, either NLP training or some kind of thing to modify and change their internal representations about finance, they're so used to thinking about debt and what they owe that even if they pay everything off, they still should be thinking about debt, and they put themselves back into it in the first place, and nothing ever changes. They're totally focused on what they owe all the time, so they never, ever, ever get ahead at all. It's this exact same thing that you're talking about. Like, when you initially begin a seminar or you're doing one-on-one, what do you do to interrupt those patterns? Or do you use language patterns to interrupt the patterns? Or are you using audio? What are you doing to interrupt those things and reinstall something better?
Well, the first thing I do in the first hour is teach them this mind control that I've just been teaching your listeners here, and that is to note that the language you use puts representations in front of your mind. So even if I say to you, don't think about giraffes, then unless you don't know what a giraffe is, you can't make a picture of it. But if you do know what a giraffe is, you're going to have a representation in your mind of a giraffe, just to understand what I'm saying. And so even when people say don't, it's usually best to put what you want to have afterwards. So instead of saying don't fail, which makes you having to think of failing in order to process the sentence, you would say, you know, don't you want to succeed, which makes you think of something completely different.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
It's the difference between saying don't drink and drive, what do you have to think of to understand the statement, and
right.
saying drive sober. Drive sober is a completely different thought.
Right, right, right. Now, how much emphasis on hypnosis do you use during your seminars or one-on-one? Is the combination of NLP and hypnosis work well together?
Oh, well, you know, let's put it this way. NLP is about language and how people experience reality, and all that hypnosis is using language to alter someone's state, and in the process of doing so, overcome their critical thinking. Now, everybody's capable of doing this. You ever get somebody pissed off, and they stop critical thinking, they just respond, and they get pissed off because of what you've done?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, you're inducing a state, and you know the same skills that get someone into a state like that are the same skills that takes them into a very relaxed state, from unhappy to happy, you know, from feeling tired to feeling energized. You know, who says it all only has to be from being awake to being asleep?
Right, right. Now, I want to make sure that we get to this story of Get a Grip, which is the inspiration of my commercial that I run on this network, and I had it on other places, and it's run all over the place, and people have made jokes about it. But tell us about Get a Grip. I love this story.
Well, you know, it is a grippy kind of stuff that one company's I developed this product so that the lumber industry, which has rollers to move the boards and stuff through the mills, would have a grip on the surface of these rollers so the boards would grab nicely, you know, and so I called it Get a Grip. I figured that one of the nice things about that is that it was a command telling them what I wanted them to do.
Right,
and it was a product. And besides, whenever one of our salespeople left a message with the secretary to tell John that so and so phoned, she says, "What's the message? Tell him to get a grip." Those messages always got through. yeah, it was just a lot of fun, and we sent them out samples of the product, and then the representative would phone them up with make sure they had that sample handy in hand, and then they would use some. Language embedded so that it would go simply, you know, you grab a hold of it, you feel good traction between your hand, and the Get a Grip lets you know it works.
Right. Now, everybody, that is where feeling good, and this that my commercial, this is where it came from, about this Get a Grip, because I heard it a long time ago, and I was sitting in a room with a bunch of actors and a couple of producers as well, and people listened to this, and they thought it was so hilarious and so funny that now a bunch of people around L.A. are using that statement, feel good, all the time out. Thanks to you. You probably don't even know that, but it's true.
That's funny. Well, you know, on the business side, when the people on the phone heard that, they've got this thing in their hand, and yes, they could feel the traction, and it does feel good, and they all of a sudden, they feel good, and they're wondering, did he actually say that, or was he meaning something else?
Right, right.
Their conscious mind is distracted, and in the process, the end part, which means you know it works, is just accepted without any critical thinking. And then there's no question about, hey, is this stuff you just sent me, does it actually work? Because that would be the biggest objection. And so just a simple statement like that gets them feeling good, gets their conscious mind distracted, and they forget to have any critical thinking about whether it actually works or not. The fact that they can feel it and it feels like good traction, they're convinced. Done.
Done, just like that. Now, have you had advertising firms come to you and say, hey, listen, we have this particular product, we're going to be doing print advertising articles, we want the language correctly, please come help us. Have you been asked to do those type of things?
Occasionally, you know, it's not something I get involved with all the time because I don't promote it per se, and I'm sure there's a big market for that sort of stuff if one decides to, you know, really specialize in it. I get a lot of the people from the advertising firms come to the course, and so that they learn how to apply the stuff themselves.
Right, right. Now, do you find that most of the people that show up at these seminars, is it because they've had enough of their own behavior, so to speak, and they want to make an internal change themselves, or is it because they want an edge in business?
I'd say the latter is for the most part, it's people who are already doing well and they want to do even better. Occasionally, there are people. I mean, the seminar is not a therapy session. It's there to teach people about how their minds process reality and what they can do with that, and how to notice their neurolinguistic programs, the patterns that they run. We like to call them nice language patterns. If they're not nice, then fix them.
Right. Exactly. Now, I'm sure that as you've had continuing people come and take your seminar, that you hear back from them. What are the things that you hear back from people after they've worked with you?
Well, you know, usually the ones that I like to hear about the most, and it's usually a year or 2 years after, is they phone me up and go, hey, those 20 goals you made me write out at the seminar, I got them all done. Now I have to write another 20. So that's always a lot of fun to hear that from people. But the funniest ones that I've heard is a couple of times where wives phoned up and they'd sent up a husband who was rather shy about interacting with others and so forth, they almost said the exact same thing. So I don't know what you did with the guy I sent up to train with you, but if you run into him again, keep him there because I like the one you sent back better.
Good. So it helps out relationships quite a bit. Then, do you have married couples that come up there and their relationships are actually a lot better afterwards?
Yeah, and a lot of times people come at the seminar for a reason that is related to business, and then they find that they can use the skills to create fantastic relationships with their kids and things they never had before. So, you know, there's a complete crossover. It's not focused on one thing. This is about communication, and you think about all the places that there's communication. It's on TV, it's on billboards, it's in magazines, it's here right over your show, that communication is going all the time. And when people sit and daydream, they're communicating with themselves. So learning the principles of how that works is applicable to all of that communication. We give all kinds of examples where people learn how to apply it in everything from team building to seduction.
Great, great. Hang on to that thought. We're going to be right back. We're going to take a quick commercial break, at which you're going to hear the inspiration of Steve Boyle coming up right here. Hang on, everybody. We'll be right back.
A time for cutting hair. Is there a time for high street shopping? To find the right dress to wear. Here she comes. Let's turn around. Here she comes.
Hey everybody, this is James Martinez from the Cashflow Show. I want to ask you one question and one question only. You're ready to change your life. Now, as you begin to think about that question, how many of you are swimming in credit card debt, tired of your credit cards controlling your life, behind in your payments, struggling to make ends meet, worried about your financial well-being? You're going to end that now. Enough is enough. This is hot. Are you ready to feel good? Now? That's right. Call our 800 number, and listen to the 12-minute overview that explains who we are and what we do to end your credit card debt. Leave your name and number after the message and do it today. Call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655. Freedom is a phone call away. Away. A way for you to feel good now. 888-213-7655. 888-213-7655.
You're listening to AR, AchieveRadio.com. What talk radio should be all the time.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father.
Okay, everybody, we're back. This is James Martinez. This is the host of Cash Flow. Here today, June 4th, 2009, my special guest is Steve Boiley from the Performance Institute of NLP. You can find him on NLPmind.com. I know we got listeners all over the place, and for those of you that are listening in London, Canada already, and all over the U.S., I highly, highly, highly recommend you check out this website. Sign up. This would be some of the best money you ever spent actually going in and studying with this particular gentleman. You're going to have a great, great, great time, and you're going to be a much, much better, effective communicator, as well as you probably have a clear understanding of what your immediate financial goals are too, which is the whole point. Because I know a lot of you out there are trying to figure out what money is now, what are you going to do for your future financially. You've got to set up and kind of create your outcomes more effectively. So what I want to ask you, Steve, is like if somebody's got major financial problems and they're, let's say they're starting from zero and they want to effectively alter the way their self-esteem and their relationship to money, what would be like the initial steps that you would suggest for somebody?
Well, first of all, I bet your listeners couldn't crash my server at NLPmind.com.
Right. Good one.
You know, it all starts with just your, you know, attitude towards things. A lot of times people feel like they don't deserve, and that's a very interesting word when you examine what it says. It says deserve, and oftentimes I find that people serve and serve and serve, and they don't allow themselves to deserve, and it's very important to have that kind of balance. That whenever they are faced with having some success, they don't feel they deserve it. And so realizing that service should, if you're going to have a balanced lifestyle, should have deserve. And so when you've put in, you get to take out. And when you keep that balanced, you remain strong, you're able to help yourself more, and you're able to help others more. And a lot of it comes down to just beginning to feel good for absolutely no other reason than it feels good to do it. You know, I mean, what other reason do you need? You know, it's a matter of do the good things that happen that make a person feel really good happen because they felt good to begin with? Or does it really work to feel shitty and try and achieve the things that make you feel good? It actually doesn't. That just, you know, feeling shitty is a great way to end up getting the things that you don't want rather than
right.
Things that you do want.
So right. Now, are people professional? Are they pretty much socially conditioned to feel bad? And they, because I've looked at this for a long time, and most people do not know how to feel good. They just don't know how to do it.
No, well, you know, we have the stigma sometimes that they feel bad about feeling good unless they've, you know, done something to deserve it, and then they feel bad, and then they feel bad about feeling bad because it's not a good thing. You're not supposed to feel bad either, so they don't know what to feel. And a simple technique is to use the vowels of the English language to feel good. You know, anytime any of you wants to feel good, just, do you know what the vowels of the English language are?
Oh, James. Yeah, I do, but go ahead and demonstrate for us.
Well, go ahead. Tell us what the vowels are.
Well, it depends on your delivery of them, A, E, I, O, U, but A.
That's right. That's it. When you get into, the key is to say them breathy in your mind, you know, rather than the A, E, I, O, U, and sometimes Y. And if you listen to me like this all day, you'd be going, ah, right?
Right.
That's what happens in people's minds, is that they talk themselves in shitty tonality, and then they don't feel... By the way, can we say that word on radio?
No, not really, but it's too late now. But sorry, everybody.
Bleep.
Bleep. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, bleep the bleeping bleepers anyways, so... yeah. So the key is just to say the vowels in another way on the inside of your mind so that they're kind of breathy. And this is what makes for resonant tonality when you're talking to yourself and talking to others. And so the vowels go A, E, I, O, U, Y. Why do we do these things? Because it feels good. And then when you feel good, that's the best way to go ahead and make decisions about what you're going to do. Because what we found is that when people feel bad, then they make bad decisions. And when they feel good before making a decision, they generally make good decisions.
Yeah, that's what I keep telling people. I've talked to people over and over again, and most people don't – when they're making life decisions, they don't feel good at the moment they're doing it. So they're not at their best kind of – place to be. So when you in your seminars, initially when you start off, you're trying to change their resource state initially and make them feel good first?
Well, it's a matter of how they approach things. As I said earlier, they can look at the prospect of doing something with in their minds or in their minds, and that makes a huge difference on how they approach it. When it comes to money, here's what I suggest. Whenever you're facing the situation where there's an opportunity to make money, people oftentimes are afraid that they're going to miss out, that they're not going to get the money. And that fear comes through and often will actually get in the way of them achieving what they want to achieve. Those who don't seem to be too worried about it, that they're confident, those people tend to achieve what they want to achieve. And here's a simple way to do that. Anytime when you're walking up for that job interview or making a sale or whatever the case may be, is to realize, first of all, you can't lose anything that you don't have.
Right. Good.
Okay, so that's step one. Now, the most important thing is as you walk up, just imagine that the cash is knee-deep and you have to wade through it to get to where you're going to do this stuff. And how does that make you feel? And it's just then you have this sense of abundance. And when people get into the situation where they need the difference that makes the difference so they can get the cash happening for themselves, then that kind of attitude that they are confident, secure, wading through the cash will get them to the point where they actually have the cash far more than being afraid of it disappearing.
Right. So that you're saying the act of contemplation on a certain level increases the ability for somebody to gain more financial resources.
It's just a thought after all.
Right. It is. You find most people aren't even thinking in those patterns most of the time. Do you discover that? Have you found that?
Well, sure. You know, they're thinking about what they don't want. They're thinking about how they don't want to miss the interview or bleep it up or this or that. So rather than thinking about what they do want and thinking about how going there is an action that is taking them in a new direction. And it's always fun to have a new direction in life, especially when it's wading through cash.
Right. Right, exactly.
I don't want to be hard on your listeners. I'm just saying it's just a thought. Oftentimes you ever get together with relatives talking about what happened in the past that we all respond to as if it was real, and you find out everybody had different stories about what actually happened.
Right. That happens all the time. That's right. Yeah, exactly.
So somebody's got a fiction in their mind, and they respond to it as if it's real. So, whenever I hear people talk about their his story, I'm reminded that the word is his story. So it's somebody's story. It's not necessarily the truth. We react as if it is the truth. You asked me about hypnosis earlier. I'll tell you. The point of hypnosis is not getting people into trance. That's easy. They're already there. The point is getting them out of the day-to-day trances they go into that are not useful for them. They're all hypnotized into believing their own life.
Right. So I'm interested in watching the process as this unravels before people, because their perceptions and their beliefs, which aren't always accurate about themselves, you kind of break that to pieces. I kind of know how you do it, but when people realize and they reevaluate their beliefs about their own finances and abilities and skills, now here's the thing. Is it maintained? Because most people I know that go to seminars, they go there, they go through this kind of defragmenting their mental disk drive, so to speak, and then when they go away, they kind of default back to a nasty internal dialogue and belief systems that weren't installed right. Do you find that, or what do you see?
Well, you know, there are a lot of seminars that are like that. They're sort of rah-rah. I call them the cookie seminars, where they hand out cookies. And if the cookie is just the right flavor, right, and if it suits your life perfectly, it usually works pretty good. Oftentimes, the cookie that's handed out is, you know, something that somebody else has baked for their life, and it might not fit the seminar participants so well. And after a couple of weeks, you know, in essence, what's happened is they got motivated, they got cranked up, and they got given the surface of things, and they weren't given the deeper structure that allows them to create something for themselves. So I liken these seminars to the difference with most seminars. You're going and getting a ready-made cookie on how to be a manager, on how to be an advertising agent, on how to be spiritual, on how to face finance and all this sort of stuff. So a lot of seminars will give you those cookies because it's a cookie cutter thing, and you know, it's like being spoon-fed, tell you what to do. Whereas at our seminar, we teach you how to bake cookies so you can create a recipe that's just perfect and unique for you, and you can apply it and bake cookies for anyone. So, that, you know, there is a bigger market for ready-made cookies than there is for the baking class.
Yeah, I got that. I understand. Now, I'm always interested in hearing what you do for people that come to you that aren't motivated to make any changes. How do you create those propulsion systems for people to move toward what they do want? Of course, they got to figure out what they do want first, not focus on what they don't want. But what do you do to install, or how do you help them to motivate them toward what they desire?
You know, I think it comes down to the ultimate goal and what the definition of success is. Some people define success as the destination, and others define success as the journey. Personally, I like the one that defines it as a journey. And it goes something like this, that success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal, which then begs the question, what's the worthy ideal? Now, here's the way that I find that it ultimately works well for people and gets them to achieve all of their goals, is to think of the ultimate goal. And the ultimate goal is, what have you done in your lifetime? So it may seem a little bit morbid, but it sure cuts to the quick real quick, if you'll excuse that pun. The thing is if a person considers that they've spent a long and successful life and they've had a lot of fun, now they're dead, and you start listening to the eulogy that's being read, and if it's going, couldn't cut the mustard, then you know you've got to make some changes in your life. Right,
exactly.
So the key is to take a few minutes and just write, what do you want people to say about you, how you lived your life? They're usually not going to talk about, should have seen the car he had.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They talk about the role that the person performed in society as a son or a daughter, as a parent, in the community, in their profession, and the goals they achieved and so forth. And a person very, very quickly gets to the quick of what their ultimate goal is, how they live their lifetime, and the kinds of things that were their values. And from there, all of the other goals fall into context and into place. You know, maybe a good example of this is when I have clients that want to get slimmer, and I ask them, I say, well, what's your idea of what an old person looks like? And many of them have never stopped and consciously thought of it, but it's there by default that somewhere when they were a kid even, they got programmed on what it's like to be old by some old people, maybe the family. And they, so their unconscious has this destination in mind. And if they have a thought of that being old means to be like grandma or grandpa who was, you know, 100 pounds overweight, which means they were overweighting to do something about it for a long time.
Right. Right.
It good. Describes the mental condition, doesn't it?
Right.
So the thing is when they look at what their idea is, they realize that they're perfectly on the road to achieving that.
Right, so, exactly. They're right on track.
So we either set this long-term destination and imprint it on your unconscious and go, this is it. We're like George Burns with two beautiful blondes and a cigar at 92 and slim and feeling good, right? So, or something like that. So when they have that ultimate destination in mind, then their unconscious looks and goes, whoa, we're off track, and starts to make the adjustments. And then it becomes a natural process of achievement. Your unconscious is extremely powerful. It'll bring all kinds of things into your life and change all kinds of behaviors. With all you have to do is really focus on what the ultimate destination is.
Do you find that most people aren't clearly defining what their ultimate destination is? Like I've been asked to, like, when you write down your outcomes of what you actually want, what you're trying to achieve, whether it's financially, personally, they say write it down. Write down what you see in your future. Write down what you smell in your future. What does it feel like in your hands? All through the senses. Is that a good idea to do that, to clearly define what you want?
It's a little bit slow, I think. You know, the thing about writing it down is it helps create some ideas. But what's really important is to have a multi-sensory experience, like put yourself into the future. And once you're in there, because we all have this time machine in our heads, that's the problem with most people. They get too much time to think, and they're not in the moment, enjoying the moment. You know, I say to them this, you like gifts? Everybody goes, oh, yeah, I like gifts. Well, gifts are in the present, man, and you got to be present to enjoy it instead of spending time in the time machine in the past or in the future. Now, those things are useful. However, if you really want to enjoy the present, you know, the gift is here in the present moment. So you can take – there's always a present. You're either this future present moment or a past present moment. And if you take yourself out into That's it. I'll tell you what, you know, there are some present moments that were bleeping awful, I'll tell you that. And
right.
Some people go and they sit in those ones. I don't think it's a good idea. I think the best idea is to think of the present moments, the ones that were gifts, right? Those are the ones to spend time in. And go out into the future and give yourself the gift of being in that present moment and have a look around with all of your senses at the same time, because that's the way your brain works, very, very, very quickly. And oftentimes people spend too much time laying it out in this detail, that detail. Heck, they could just draw a little picture that represents that whole thought, and that would be quite sufficient. The key is putting your mind there and having a look around and having a look back through time. Because we're all good at doing that. We have a his story.
Right.
So we might as well create a future history. Go out into the future. Be in the kind of position you'd like to be in. Look around. See what you've got there. What kinds of things are you experiencing there? And then look back through time to the day you were listening to that crazy hypnotist from Canada on the radio. And notice all the changes that took place right after that show and how you began to achieve these things and the things you did differently and the steps you took in order to be where you are. And then that creates a future, an experience of the future things you're going to do, right? And so if you go out, for example, to the end of next week and the end of next month and the end of 6 months from now and a year from now and 6 years from now, then on each journey, when you look back, you're actually experiencing things. So, for example, if I go out to next week, then I have an experience of next week. Then I go out to next month, and I look back through time. I'm looking back through the next week experience I've already had. So it really begins to imprint it with the multiples when you go out further and further in time and think about what are you experiencing through time. It creates for you a path for your unconscious. And you know what it's like when you do things? It's always easier the second time around. Well, let's create a plot and plan to have an ecstatic, marvelous future and experience that so that when you start now in the gift of this present moment, it's going through something you've already gone through in your mind. And it's always easier the second time around.
So it's a mental rehearsal.
Sure, exactly.
And do you find that most people, when they're trying to go through a mental rehearsal of what they want in their future, they're not clear about it? Because I talk to people all the time out here, and they want this, and they want this, and they want this, but they don't have it clearly defined and haven't even contemplated their probability in their future at all. So it's really unclear, so the unconscious doesn't really have a clue.
Well, you know, the thing is, if they sit in the future experience and look around at what's there, it doesn't have to be so detailed. It's a feeling of the kinds of things that they have. And that gets imprinted, and they start moving towards that. And then once they're in the habit of going out into the future, we call it future pacing, and future pace themselves and look back through time at the things they've done, it helps the unconscious organize the timeline as to how many steps it's going to take, how many things have to be achieved before they get to this point with a nice house and car and everything paid for.
Right.
Right.
So I love that. All right, do you find out that when people come to see you that they're at a critical point in their life, they've had enough, they're ready to make some big changes? Does it help to be prepared to make changes? Or do you find a lot of people that are resistant, that even though they want to be there, these habitual patterns that they're in, that they've had their entire lives, they're hard to break because they don't know what to replace them with?
Well, you know, this is where looking around at what other people who are achieving what you want to achieve are doing in terms of patterns to achieve these things and modeling those. And we provide people with some very specific techniques of how to step into those kinds of patterns, how to search them out and find them and literally install new, you know, software on how to think and what to do while you're thinking it to achieve the things you want to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Do you find, do you have people from, how far has someone come to you? Have people come from Australia to take your courses?
Oh, yeah, we've had them from all over the world, Australia, Hong Kong, the Far East, Middle East, Europe, all over North America. I think the only place we haven't had anybody yet is from South America. Hmm. But otherwise, we see people from all over the world here.
And how is the different cultures, how do they react?
Well, you know, of course, the fact that I start out the seminar and with this comment, there's going to be some bleeping swearing during this bleeping seminar, so your bleeping well might as well get used to it.
Right.
Fill in the bleeps for yourself.
Right.
You know, it's about language. I make fun of everybody equally.
Right.
I'm into, you know, opening their awareness and their thinking and understanding that if they're going to be specialists on communication, that it doesn't do very well if they're unable to handle various types of communication. Sometimes when it comes to the bleeping swearing, people's minds shut off the moment that they hear something like that. And when they don't have to use that kind of language themselves, however, they ought to, as communication skills specialists, be able to receive information from people who do talk that way and talk in a variety of ways, whether it be, you know, deaf, blind, dumb. There's all kinds of ways to communicate that you can use.
Right. I've heard Tony Robbins, when the doors are shut on his seminars, he's bleeping all the time. In fact, in most of his major speeches, there's always bleeping going on in there. And people are like shocked that he would even talk that way.
Well, you know, it's dulled down for the public.
Exactly. Okay, so what I want to do, everybody that's listening, going to be emailing and checking out this, please feel free to go to NLPmind.com. Check out Steve Boiley. I guarantee you, if you go up and you spend some time, you're going to learn a lot. You're going to be a much, much more effective communicator. Do you have any seminars coming up in the future? Have you already got that planned or...
Yeah, we've got one happening the last week of August, and we've got one happening the last week of October. Those are the last two for this year. We may be doing one in the Middle East coming up later in the year. We'll see how that goes, and then there'll be four more next year.
Four more. So how many seminars do you do a year?
Four.
Four a year.
We just completed one here a week ago, and very interesting training with people from all over the world. with all kinds of different objectives on how they wished to apply the communication skills. They all went away having learned how to apply it, not only to the objectives that they had in mind when they arrived, but to every aspect of communication in their lives.
Great. Great. Hey, well, thank you very, very much for taking the time to come on board. I know I'm going to be seeing you sometime in the future. I'm going to make a trip up there, so I'll get to meet you in the flesh for sure.
Feels good typing in NLPmind.com.
Great, great. Thanks so much, Steve. Take care, man.
Ooh.
Take care.
Gotta see the website.
See you later.
It makes you wanna sing. It's such a beautiful thing. Lots of diamond rings. The happiness it brings. You live like a king with lots of money and things.
Ka-ching.
Hey everybody, this is James Martinez from the Cashflow Show. I want to ask you one question and one question only. You're ready to change your life. Now, as you begin to think about that question, how many of you are swimming in credit card debt, tired of your credit cards controlling your life, behind on your payments, struggling to make ends meet, worried about your financial well-being? You're going to end that now. Enough is enough. This is hot. Are you ready to feel good now? That's right. Call our 800 number and listen to the 12-minute overview. It explains who we are and what we do to end your credit card debt. Leave your name and number after the message and do it today. Call 888-213-7655. That's 888-213-7655. Freedom is a phone call away. Away. A way for you to feel good now. 888-213-7655. 888-213-7655.
Well, the world and no bed of roses, the man he said to me. Oh, someday, boy, you might have to go and set somebody free. And oh, well, if the sun, if the sun refuse you to shine, gotta find a way to light your own road some of the time. Well, I've read Marx, oh, but I am no communist. And from all I've seen, well, most of the world is full of it. And everybody seemed to be buying what they sold.